Remember the first time you saw a race car on an open trailer? Maybe it was full of dirt, tire marks, and other battle scars. You wondered where it had been, and more importantly, where it was going next. Every open trailer has a story, and we're here to tell it. Welcome to the Open Trailer Podcast.
So here's something that doesn't happen often on the podcast, probably should, and it might more depending on who shows up. But as it was so eloquently put to me at Oxford Plains Speedway this past weekend, so open trailer, huh? Open, yep. Yeah. Oh, I've heard that. Yep. Hey, so you do you're the guys that do all the old guys. Taking at face value, that's it's an odd statement, but. I get it. That's what we're known for, and that's what... it's good to be known for something. And what that tells me is the person who said that didn't grow up with the people who are featured on the podcast, but he's checked it out because of shares and different promotions. And that's... It's a huge compliment because that's one of the main reasons why I started the podcast is... We didn't have many firsthand accounts by the people who experienced what we get to enjoy today. And before they pass away, I wanted to, you know, get those stories recorded. And we've done a lot of that, and there are other avenues that have done so as well. So I think as a group, we've done a pretty decent job the last half dozen years preserving some of these legends who, again, built what we have today, which is a great Oxford 250 event. Now, today's guest raced in the Oxford 250, did pretty well, had some controversy. And if you saw the accident or incident, whatever you want to call it, you certainly have your opinion about it. The only two people who know are the gentlemen driving those race cars, one of which is on the show. Unfortunately, we recorded it before this incident, our latest one, because it wasn't their first rodeo. If you've only heard about it on social media... Well, you've heard a number of different opinions, and it's not all bad. You see, social media, it gets a bad rap for the amount of smack that is talked about in racing circles. And it doesn't help that when a racetrack closes, one of the top reasons is, well, you know, because of social media, there's some credence to an argument that social media is somewhat eroding the competitor base, because, I mean, think of it this way. If you get a couple of people, a couple of lifers who, you know, and I'm sure that social media wouldn't be the only reason why they stop, but it's the one that put them over the top and the one that had them clean house and buy a boat and go enjoy their life that way. You know, you do that in consecutive years, say three or four people a year, you know, that hurts. That hurts the back gate. And if you're not replenishing that, you know, there's certainly an argument there. But I think if social media, even the negative stuff, if you can throw a few haymakers and land them perfectly, I mean, that is an art. And it's almost, it is WWE style promotion, especially to a sport that was, everybody likes to talk about, oh, we're built on rivalries, and I used to go to the races with my dad, and he hated that guy so much, and they booed him out of the place. Yeah, they did. You know why? Because they all hated that They were so passionate about the people that they either loved or they didn't like, and that still exists today. A lot of that passion is carried out on a keyboard. And I think if you didn't see the incident with, let's just take Trevor Sanborn and Mike Rowe again. If you didn't see it, and you read the back and forth between the parties involved, not the actual drivers, mind you, but the parties involved, are you at least a little interested on what happens next? The next time those two cars, and they're both fast cars, they're both very capable drivers, they're going to be next to each other. It's inevitable. Don't you want to know what happens next? You see, part of story building is what it isn't what necessarily happened. It's telling you what happened, but it's building to what could happen next. It may never happen, but there's like in Dumb and Dumber, of all movies to reference, that's the one I go with. So you're saying there's a chance. And that's what this is all about. It's promoting racing, and I don't think that, you know what? Listen, I have said a number of things online. Some that I regret, others I don't. And I think I've always been genuine about it. I mean, just be genuine. And that goes for both sides, too. I mean, there are the, you know, don't say anything bad on social media, right? So some of those people are the people who complain about the amount of rules at the racetrack, which I find extremely ironic that, well, we used to love it when the rule book was real thin. Cool. Social media is ruining racing. Why? Because people don't know how to handle it. Oh, so you're saying we need more rules. Can't have it both ways. And everyone loves a rivalry, but few people want to be part of one. Like, truly have a side that doesn't like you. It takes a very special person with thick skin, the understanding that it's just life and you might as well enjoy it. And this is entertainment. It's passion. It's competition. But to the person that's in the grandstands, it's entertainment. Instead of going to the water park, instead of going to the beach, instead of going for a long drive, instead of just sitting in their house, they chose to sit on the wooden plank and yell at you. Be thankful for that. There are some people who are excellent at it, but those people are few and far between. At any rate, enough. Let's get into today's podcast. Trevor and Corey get into how he hooked up with Jay Cushman for a very successful run. And then there was, see, to me, this all seems so recent. But for Trevor to tell it, it seems like a lifetime ago that big NASCAR had all these driver development deals and people were being signed for big money. Trevor was one of them until he wasn't. But he did get to do some really cool things. And we also get into one of the things that I believe Trevor's one of a few who experienced old North Wilkesboro with the revitalization of the same track. And for those that remember the 2011 event, we get into that and what North Wilkesboro is like today. So it's pretty action-packed. Hope you enjoy it. It is Trevor and Corey Sanborn, stage number 2 of Open Trailer Podcast.
Brad Layton was Moody's primary driver. Something happened like week 2 that they basically came calling and wanted him to go.
Is this? I thought it happened a little bit before then. But,
well, yeah. We raced for Moody in 08.
Yeah, okay.
Two races south, which makes me think about when Trevor mentioned not working on the car after it comes out of the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
We unloaded at Orange County with a perfect race car both times, didn't have to change a thing, and
set the air pressure and go.
Kind of made
it look foolish. Fuel it.
Yeah.
So the race is won in the shop.
Yeah, most definitely. But you know, in between the times that you were you know, you're winning those races early on with the Billadoux car, you go to the Travis Keel car, you hook up with Jay Cushman.
I know, yeah.
How does that happen?
Well, Dad and Jay were friends over the years, and for a couple summers, when Jay wasn't doing nothing, maybe it was just 06, he was floating around Beechridge, just floating around, didn't bring any race cars. Yeah. I mean, he'd stop at the car and hang out and talk to my dad. I didn't know who he was.
Jay's a pretty good judge of talent. It's almost like he's a scout.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's what he was doing.
Yeah. He kept talking to my dad, but never about anything about driving his race cars. Well, racing season ended. Jay called Dad.
Yeah.
Jay said, I'd like you and Trevor to come up to the shop and check the race shop out. I got a proposal for you guys.
He approached you?
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Him and my dad might have talked. I don't
right,
know.
Right, right. But I mean, like, it's not
no,
like
he was
you were
interested
being,
in me racing.
Yeah, you weren't knocking on the door.
No. Okay. I had no idea. I thought I was just going to race Beechridge again next year,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
So we went up to his new shop there on Dutton Hill Road. It was only a few years old at that point. And he had he had three Hanley cars, and you know, I mean, his race shop 60 by 100. There ain't no one had a race shop like that, and they still really don't till this day. Jay's got the baddest race shop ever. And he made a deal with my dad, and we were going to run the whole 07 season on the Pass Tour. And we did. We did very well. I think we finished second four or five times.
His nickname that year was the Bridesmaid.
You know, we
did Marco give you that name?
I don't know if it was
the Bridesmaid. Yeah,
I mean, we went the first time I went to Thompson, we finished second against Ben. It was the opening day. We went to Annie Ganish Riverside Speedway, which is Annie Ganish now.
Yeah,
we led 125 laps in the rear end blue, made $6,000 in lap money. We went to Groveton. Led every lap, and the lights went completely black on the track, and we all had to stop. Luckily, none of us wrecked.
Yeah.
And I think
Kelly Moore
won it against me up there, and Richie Dearborn was third, and we were second.
Second to Johnny at Unity.
You know, we had a
Bangor.
You're knocking on the door.
Had an unbelievable season with Jay's cars. Mm-hmm. Jay had, you know, them Hanley cars were great race cars.
And it was a 29.
Like, you didn't have to change nothing there.
Right.
And, you know, Jay had great, great power, Ford power. Like, the best.
Yeah. Did he have a factory deal?
No. He was just.
Because if he's got Hanley cars, Ford power.
He just was always a Ford man with anything and everything.
He had a lot of connections down
south. Yeah. So Wood Brothers and different things.
He was good friends with Wood Brothers, still is.
Yeah. But he
Jay's
definitely
uncle Sonny was rebuilt the rear ends and the gearboxes. He was pretty awesome to Trevor.
Jay put me on a different level. In 07, in 06, our car got set up by Jeff Taylor. Barry Meserve looked over it, took care of it, kept it in his shop. 05 and 06. When I went to Jay, I didn't really know much about a race car. Could I jack it up and put on jack stands?
Right.
Yeah. Jay taught me how to do bump steer. Jay taught me how to scale race cars.
How much time are you spending over there at the shop every week?
Oh, I was there two or three nights a week after work.
So you're just sucking it all in.
Yeah. I couldn't get enough of it. I wanted to go there all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jay really is the one that taught me the learning steps of those race cars. And then, you know, we finished that season out, and somehow Jay wasn't going to do as much racing, and we got hooked up with Rick Moody and did a little more racing. And then Brian Burgess is the crew chief for those cars. Now, he brought me to the next level with knowing how to work on them and, you know, make them fast.
So how old are you at this point? 20?
20 and 07, so 20 and a half. Going into 08, I guess.
In hindsight, in your mind, you're on a trajectory that's going up.
Mm-hmm.
Are you thinking that you're going to be in Big 3 NASCAR? Was that your aspiration?
I had that dream a few years before when we got picked for the Waltham driver development deal in 2006. And then everything backfired when the old driver of Kelly Byers and the owners, Tom and Wally, got kind of in a little bit of a lawsuit over Kelly Byers going to Wood Brothers, and they're supposed to get a kickback because they got him in there, and it all backfired, and then they sold the whole team.
Oh, so it was a driver development, and that was peak NASCAR driver development.
Yeah.
I mean, they would sign, I wouldn't say they would sign anybody, but, you know, if you got signed, you were on a salary.
Yes.
You got a manufacturer deal. You got sunglasses deal.
He went to Waltham, and they were going to pay him $800 a week to live out there and work on these ASA
on these cars with Howie Leto, the crew chief. They had a toter home. They had five race cars.
How'd you even get to that point? Like, how did you have, to enter? They find you?
Bonnie Johnson.
Yes, Bonnie Johnson was doing sponsor proposals and different things for us. And she's the one that sent it in. And I don't know, they said there was around 1,000 entries and 10 of us got picked. I can't remember all the kids, but I was one. Derek Thorne was one.
I remember most of them. Jacob Gady was the other winner.
Yeah. Bozell.
Andy and Phil Bozell. I can't remember which one's the dad.
Alex Haas.
Alex Haas, who was Kyle Busch's understudy.
Uh-huh.
Hamner Racing's engines, their son, Jason.
No, Jeff Hamner's boy. I don't remember his first name.
Justin, Jason?
No. But anyways, yeah.
Yeah, so you're down to the final 10. Out of the, even if it wasn't 1,000, let's just say it's 800.
Stephen Light was the driver of the car.
Okay.
He was moved on to Childress.
Yeah.
Actually, I think he went to Rouse.
So that whole thing, Howie Letta was crewing it. Chaz Howe was a part of the big deal of that whole thing. He had them cars built out of his shop.
Right.
He was one of the judges at Tri-County that day when we were all there testing.
Yeah.
And I got picked. Jacob Gady got picked. And when we got picked, they told us right then and there, we're going to Nashville next week, boys.
Can you be in Nashville in like 3 days?
Oh,
like,
to you?
Yeah. Well, like, I'm like, I don't know. I don't even know how. I barely don't.
How do I get there?
He's 18. Right. Friend Roger Varney.
Yeah.
Is from Oxford, Maine, but we're staying at Jay Fogelman's place, so we're like just in North Carolina on a wing and a prayer.
Right, thankful that Roger's like, Jay didn't care if Roger went to Nashville with us. Roger's like, I'll drive you guys over to Nashville from Durham.
Like a 6-hour drive.
We went to Nashville on a Friday or something.
And how old are you, 19?
Yeah, 18, 19, somewhere's around there. And
wow.
What a difference from going to Beechridge Motor Speedway
to
5/8 mile, High Bank, Nashville.
He'd only ever been to Oxford and Beechridge.
Yeah, tell me about the first time you drove on the Nashville, the fairground speedway.
It was fast. We had crate motors, so it wasn't like you had a bunch of horsepower coming out of the corners and spin the cars out easy, but I don't know. It was just...
I was shitting
myself. It was a little... It wasn't scary at all. It was just out of my league. I didn't know where to brake, where to pick the gas up. It took me quite a while to get the hang of it, and we ended up getting into the race, and we're running around 10th, and someone spun out in front of us going into one. Someone wrecked somebody going into one, and we got collected.
Wait, was this the All-American 400?
It was the ASA race. The 400 was the supermotors, the supercars.
All right, so basically the next step down, but same ballpark.
Yeah.
I remember the wreck. It was Ryan Lawler and...
Yeah, who else is in this race?
John West Townley.
Yeah.
A bunch of them. Chris Buescher, James Buescher. They were parked right next to us.
Yeah.
Chris Buescher is still racing.
Yeah.
It
was a heck of a field of people there, you know, of great teams. Chaz Howe was my spotter at Nashville, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was awesome to be able to sit down at night and have dinner with them and listen to Chaz's stories about his wife used to be a sprint car racer.
All right.
They were soaking tires in the hotel bathtub.
Oh yeah, it was unreal.
Yeah,
his dad almost won the Oxford 250, but he got in a, I don't even know who it was, with Bodine or McCabe or somebody, he got in that whole gom in 82.
Oh, I remember that wreck. That was 84.
Yeah, 82, I think.
Who was his
Mike
dad again?
Mike Barry won it.
Ed Howe.
Ed Howe, the founder of
Howe
Racing Enterprises.
Oh, all right.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Didn't see that one coming. Yeah, no, Mike Barry won it in 82. Mike Rowe won it in 84. And, I mean, I remember being...
83 was Tommy Ellis. Yeah, don't get me going
Tommy
on the list.
Tommy Ellis, yeah. Man, now there's a personality. Your trajectory is up, 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 up. You get this driver development deal, and then how do you get the news that it fell apart? And how did that affect you?
The team manager called me, not the owners. The team manager that was running everything called me and said, you know, Tom and Wally have plenty of money. They owned a gas and oil company. Like, they had millions of dollars.
Hmm.
And they said it wasn't about the money. It was the principle that we got that kid there. The principle was that we got a cut for so long after that.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up getting a lawsuit. I don't know which way it went.
Right.
But on my end, they sold the team, the ASA team.
Right.
So it was really, really discouraging.
Yeah.
And then...
We got hooked up with Cushman.
We got hooked up with Jay. Did really well. Yeah. Very, very well.
And why does that go by the wayside? Just because, I mean, you said he didn't want to do as much racing?
I think that at the time, Jay had great equipment, and I don't know if we couldn't hitch horses on where we were both going. And, Rick Moody, I already raced for Rick Moody in 2006 once or twice. One at the 250 and one at the 300 that we finished second in to Ben.
Is that where you led all the laps?
No. That was 2008. Yeah. That was an awful race.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
No, 2009. That was my car.
No, well,
yeah, it was in his own car. Now I'm thinking about it.
08 was the one when you led 226 laps, and I'm like on the radio asking him to save gas.
Yeah,
because there was no yellows.
Because we thought we were going to run out,
and we didn't pit for tires yet. So that was the best race car I ever had there. Yeah, the next year, I had my car.
Yeah,
which I only raced twice that year. With 9 to go, we blew up.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was awful.
Awful seems like such a small way to describe what you were going through.
What a discouraging day.
Yeah.
You know, to be dominant and...
Was there lap money involved?
No.
No lap money. You got nothing to show for it.
Nothing. Had a bunch of good runs in that 300.
Yeah.
It was just... We were bummed out when... they didn't have it anymore, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
Just
you know,
goes to
that
show
was all
you.
Our local friends and local people, and it was just
how
a good time.
Hard those long distance races are to win.
Hmm.
You know, especially when there's a pit stop involved that reshuffles the field. In 08, when he led all those laps, we had a dominant car by far, and we put tires on and could only finish fourth because we, you know, had the tires a little messed up or whatever.
Hmm. Was Butchie doing your tires?
No, he was not.
No.
So, do you race for Moody in the South before you race for the North?
No, we started out in the North, and then we went South on the off races. They were past North and past South. They obviously didn't have the same day, so mm-hmm. we could go down there. Well, we went to Motor Mile. We went to Orange County. Like, there was more races we should have won. We just got wrecked in some of them, leading races. And,
yeah.
That's how racing is. But we won both of them races at Orange County, which was pretty cool.
How do you and Richard meet?
Jimmy Gary. I don't know. I guess he saw something in me. And
so Jim Gary was kind of the middleman, Kurt's dad.
Yes. Yeah. And Jimmy and my dad were always been friends for years and years. And Jimmy Gary is the one that called Rick Moody and said, you need to come down here to Beechridge and watch Trevor race.
Hmm.
And Rick Moody came down in 2006, the night of the 100 lapper. We finished third. And he called me. He told me to come over to the car after the race. He told me I did a great job, gave me his number, told me to call him, and I ended up calling him, and we set up a deal to run the 250.
So he gives you his number on Saturday. When do you call him?
Probably Sunday. It was probably Sunday.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I already knew that, you know, Rick was the owner of Ben's Cars.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's like getting a call from Rick Hendrick. Essentially.
Pretty much, because he was the guy that had the best stuff up here at that time.
Had that nice hauler.
Just everything.
Multiple cars.
Yeah.
Clean, fast.
And he gave me a shot to go to the 250. He had three cars in that race that year. It was me, Travis Keel, and Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And we were running probably fifth to eighth all night. We went down pit road. It was a live pit road back then. So if you didn't get the tires on in time, you got lapped by the pace car.
All right.
Well, we were supposed to only take right side tires. Barry Meserve was helping us. Things got in a panic a little bit. Barry says, let's put the lefts on. They put the lefts on. The pace car lapped us.
Yeah.
We come out. We run second all night to Jeremy Wharf a lap down. But it was sixth position a lap down.
Yeah, yeah,
but we were second.
Yeah.
And we couldn't get our lap back. I mean,
because there's no lucky dog.
No lucky dog.
Yeah. Wow.
I tried like heck a few times. You know, I drove outside of him, almost had him cleared, and, it just didn't fall right, and the yellow would come later, and I'd be second to him.
Yeah.
And just didn't work out.
How much money is involved in that ride? For example, like today, but a lot of times people end up in cars because, you know, they either bring sponsorship money mm-hmm. or they pay for the ride. Was there any of that going on back then?
We helped with the tires. My dad.
Yeah.
My dad then helped with tires and fuel, and Rick gave us 30% of the winnings. Same thing with Jay.
Mm-hmm.
We had a fixed price per race, and Jay gave us 30% of the winnings also. So right. That being said, we ran up front so much with Jay and when Rick Moody,
it paid for itself.
Well, borderline.
Yeah.
It did. There was times that it paid for itself a lot,
yeah.
which was cool.
Win in itself.
You can't do that,
right?
Racing,
no.
I definitely can't.
No, you can't because you have to get new clips every week.
Right.
You know, Trevor wasn't doing that.
It was – I just missed them days. Racing isn't like it was then. It's a little different.
How has it changed? Give me two examples. One for the good, one for the not so good.
I don't know if there's any good, but the drivers are a lot different now. There's no respect.
Hmm.
You get moved. They maul you to death. When I grew up at Beechridge, you know, Bobby and Bob, they didn't care if I was old or young. If I had the hole, they'd let me go. If I was looking, they'd let me go. Now you got an inch on somebody, you know, or somebody's got an inch on you, they're just going to plow you right up off the track. There's just, I don't know, there's no
respect. Do you think there's a way to rein that in, or is the horse out of the barn?
There would be, I think, if probably the tracks or, you know, the owners put their foot down a little more, I guess. I don't know how
would
else
it
you
would owners
do it.
Or race directors?
That's what I mean, race directors.
Yeah.
It's got to be consequences.
Somebody.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, I mean, that's it. I don't know that racing's any better today. I mean, you name one thing that's better in racing now. I mean, we all live off the past.
Yeah.
this, and that.
Yeah.
And,
you know, I will say this. I think that the people, and I've said this before on the podcast, the people that own, and I've had more experience, I guess, in New Hampshire than I've had Maine the last couple of years, post Beechridge. The people that I've dealt with in New Hampshire, whether it's directly or indirectly, Bob Weber, Ben Bukowski, at the time it was Joe Bassett who was running Lee, and Norm Wren, and I know the Jordans do a wonderful job. But the people
right.
who are there are invested in the product,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're not. You know, back in the 80s when you can look at it and say everybody was getting rich, you know, it's easy to say that. But, like, you know, your Mike Libertys, he was easily in it for the money,
mm-hmm.
right? And obviously things didn't work out so well for him. But I think the people who are in it today are full passionate. You may not agree with them all the time, but they're in it because they love it.
No,
because no one's getting rich.
I guess I could go along with that.
The Humphreys do a great job at
Humphreys,
Groveton.
Perfect, yes.
Yeah.
They have
that facility beautiful.
Yeah, that's another thing. The places that I've seen in the last half dozen years have most all of them have been upgraded.
Yep.
Monadnock. I'm going to Claremont on Saturday. That's another Bukowski. I always forget his name. Norm Wren thing, but that thing's a palace now.
Yeah.
Josh Veneta, who I work with, has a vision. He wants to bring the Tom Curley, and he has brought the Tom Curley show back to his shows that he does with JDV. So I think there's a lot of positivity that people just don't necessarily talk about. Let's get back to your racing here. So you end up with Richard Moody. You know, you do well at Orange County. What's it like to go into a different part of the country and just have so much success? So do you have a lot of the NASCAR teams looking at you down there? Were you ever looked at by any of those guys?
I don't think so. I don't really know. Actually, I think Rick Moody told me a few people called him over the years, them few years that I was
racing
early.
That was right at the beginning where you needed to have some money.
Yeah.
Like that Waltham deal, I think you could get there strictly on talent.
Yeah, that was 06, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But they were
footing the bill.
Yeah, that was the end of the gold rush.
So,
yeah.
You know, the next step was you needed $1 million or whatever.
You know, it was cool to go down south and win against some of them guys.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know?
I mean,
you know, we won at Orange County against Jeff Foltz. He owns Fury Race Cars.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty cool.
Jason Hogan.
Jeff was the man to beat in the ASA days.
Yep.
You know, it's just it was neat. Jason Hogan's another one.
Mm.
We got through 08, which we all know the economy crashed right around then.
Yeah.
My dad's scrap business went to heck in Elliott. And you know, he was helping. He was doing all the money deal with, you know, tires and fuels and stuff, and we just couldn't
with
do it.
With Moody's car.
Yeah, we just couldn't do it in 09, so I had to back out of it. I ran my car twice that year at Beechridge, once on a Saturday night, and I finished second, and then we went to the 300 and blew up that year with 9 to go, leading.
Mm. How much How much were you putting all your eggs in that 300 that year?
A lot. I was racing at times. Like then, I had to scrounge and find money or do whatever. There was times that I would go to the track and write a check. Mm-hmm. And then I had to place good enough to pay for that, or I was calling my dad on Monday begging him for money to cover it.
Wow.
I mean, that's how
tight it was. We had a pretty good program that day, though. Kurt and Jimmy were helping us.
Yeah.
Jason Ricker was helping us.
Yeah.
You know, I still feel like we won the race.
You finished third that day?
We didn't finish.
No,
we
didn't.
Blew up.
Blew up and coasted into the pit area.
Oh, my God.
But that's racing. I mean...
Was that the biggest sting that you've had in your racing career that day?
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah. But you come back, 2010. Yeah. What's the difference between 2009 and 2010?
2010, I went to race for Rick. And
right, but you started the year off in your own car.
Well, in 2010, Dad decided that we could, you know, he could help me run a full season at Beechridge. Because it, you know, it wasn't going to cost a ton of money.
Was that a brand new car that you had?
Nope, it was the same car I bought in 05 from Travis Keel.
Just a new paint scheme to it.
Yeah,
all right.
And then we ran them two races and won both.
The road to the championship was going to go through you.
And they had a pass race there. I think the pass race was before them two races and we ran it. I don't remember where we placed. But I remember Brian Burgess, that was crew chief in Rick Moody's car, he'd come up to my pit pad and he goes, "Brad ain't never been on bump stops. Can you go take his car out?"
Which
was
Beatrice?
Moody's car, yeah.
Okay.
I said, "I can try if you want me to."
Sure, I'll show Brad later.
You know, practice the day before the pass race or something. And I went out and drove it, and it was just really, really rigid. I don't know if he had really stiff bump stops or what in it, or too much rebound in the shocks, but I come in the pits and I said, this ain't going to be the hot setup, Brian. I don't know. And Brad ended up racing it. And I ended up racing my car that day.
We finished fifth with your car.
Maybe. I don't know.
So the rest of the year when he started, went back with Moody, we raced off of his points that he had accumulated from that first
pass race. From that pass race.
Oh, okay.
So that being said, we could run for the championship on the tour that year. So our next race was White Mountain, I believe. And Brad was driving one car and I was driving the other. We finished third.
Yeah, and you had won in 08 in Moody's car.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, you had to have a lot of confidence walking into that place.
I mean, we went into halfway through the season. I mean, we were leading the points on the past tour. And I ended up buying a motor from Dale Shaw. And Rick said, "Well, let's run your car at Beechridge since you run there all the time with it. It goes really well. Let's just put 44 on that car and run your car."
I remember that day.
I'm like, "All right, that sounds good to me. I'm happy to run my car
at
Beechridge."
Remember it had the Bub Billidoux on the hood?
Yeah.
We finished second to Billy Rogers. They had a restart with like 10 to go. The outside groove there was the preferred groove then. I was leading. Mm-hmm. Billy got the jump. He cleared me going into one. He won the race. We went to Tech. Scotty Reed's a tech man from Tom Mayberry. He says, "I want the valve covers off. I want to check the rockers. So I walked up in the hauler like, "I don't, you know, I know this car is good to go."
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
it wasn't.
All right.
He goes, "You're supposed to have 1.5 rockers and they're 1.6. And I said,
"Well, what kind of advantage is that?"
At Beechridge, nothing.
Nothing. It's tiny bit of power.
Maybe at a place where you could use some power. But
like Thompson.
Right.
Yeah.
Or Stafford.
So he DQ'd us. So Monday rolls around and, you know, Brian Burgess calls Tom Mayberry. Tom says he's going to keep the motor. But then Tom ended up giving the motor back. But we lost all our points. We got a huge fine. And Dale Shaw, we ended up calling Dale Shaw, Brian did. And he said, "Well, you know, why did you have them in there? Why would you sell Trevor a motor?"
Right.
He said, "I totally forgot. DJ raced down to Punta Gorda in Florida. You could run them. We took the motor out of the car, put it under the bench." So Dale even tried to call Tom and tell him that, you know, Trevor didn't have a clue about that. Because I don't know what the motor was. They didn't pull the valve covers off.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Long story short, it cost us the championship that year. Yes, we could have got wrecked or this and that later on, leading the points. But it took 100 points away from us. We ended up coming back. We went to the tenth points.
They knocked you out 100 points?
I think it was around 100 for the race, weren't it? Or 50? I don't know. I can't remember.
Jesus. I mean,
well, Andy, it put us from the leader from to 10th.
Yeah, back when a lot of people ran the tour.
Well, so, I mean, instead of getting second place points, you probably got, I don't know if they did zero or if you got last place points.
Yeah, like I'm sure they started 30 cars that day.
But a lot.
We had no choice other than to suck it up and continue to race.
Wow.
So we went and raced and... that year we went to Riverside, Groveton, with Moody's car, and Travis Benjamin was driving the other one. He got in it. We finished 1-2. I won. Travis finished second.
Yeah.
And we had a really good season. We finished second and third everywhere.
That was his first Pass North win.
Yep.
I thought that was 08.
No, that was 10. I won Pass South race before I won a North.
Oh.
Two Pass South races before North.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember because you were still doing some Beach Ridge stuff back then.
So then after that, I never had a full schedule of anything.
Yeah.
Really, right until 2017 or 18, we went back to Beach Ridge when I can afford to race myself.
So you're at this point, age-wise, 25, right? 25, 26, right? So you're no longer the young kid. You know that the big NASCAR dream isn't going to work out. What type of vocation do you pursue aside from racing? Like, what do you start to work on? Are you in your dad's scrap metal business?
So when I got out of high school in 06, I went straight to the scrap metal business. And I already knew the ins and outs. And Dad put me on the road car crushing with a portable car crusher. We were going to upstate Vermont, New Hampshire, and doing work up there. And, you know, around 2010 or 11, I was bouncing back and forth between the scrapyard and Elliott and then doing stuff out on the road for him with the car crusher. And right around then, I had talks with my dad and Linda to buy the business from them. And it never really turned into anything. But the scrap market went, you know, in the gutter, and it's probably a good thing I didn't, because
cash for clunkers kind of screwed
up. It was bad, really bad. So I still continued to work for Dad, and then I ended up moving to North Carolina in 2012 and worked for Tony Blanchard for like 6 months and drove his race car down there.
Was that where the Gary Crooks deal comes in?
No, I never had anything to do with Gary.
It's Tony Blanchard.
Oh, so the 104 wasn't Crooks.
101.
101.
Oh, the 104 car was Dickie Woodman's.
Yeah. That was Dickie Woodman, and a guy named Crazy Kevin Powell drove it.
Yeah.
So did you run the Pass North Wilkesboro race?
I did.
Yeah, tell me about that.
I ran that for Tony Blanchard. We ran a Howe car, straight from Howe.
His business was called race101.com. The car number was 101.
Mm-hmm. Chaz and Tony were good friends, and we ended up qualifying 13th or something that day out of 69 cars or something like that.
Yeah, it was wild.
And we lost a spark plug wire. It was skipping most of the race, had no power, and at the same time, my earplugs weren't fitted, and literally could not hear when I get out of the race car.
Oh, no.
It was the most painful thing ever. And you see people talking?
Yeah, you were like you had tinnitus or something.
Like, what is going on here? So it was a fun race, but we were in over our heads a little bit.
Can you tell me what it was like to go to North Wilkesboro? Because you can remember watching the races when they actually had them back. I mean, you were old enough, I think.
I was, but I don't know if I ever watched them. I might have watched them after the fact.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, replays.
Yeah.
But it was cool to go there. Very, very. It was awesome.
It
and
was
then we
cooler
went back
to go this year.
Yeah,
knowing that we had been there when it was in its original form, when it still had the garages. Now it's all gone, and it looks new again.
I think you're one of the few in the country that actually have had both experiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what's the difference? What are some of the differences from 2011 to 2023 with North Wilkesboro?
The racetrack's identical. There's nothing any different. Worn out, slipping and sliding mess.
And they're not going to change it for a while.
They're not going to change it.
Yeah, yeah.
But the whole facility around it is totally different. It's beautiful. I mean, they got these light poles that put on light show that are synced with, like, the national anthem. And
that's how it should be.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
But I hope we go back there again. I enjoy racing there. We had a great car when we raced down there. We just, you know, got cut. 75 laps weren't enough laps for us to go to the front. You know, we drove from, where did we start?
17th?
Yeah. And
was 19th? It your race that had all those
finished
cautions?
Ninth. We had...
I was watching a lot of that week, and it seems like every race was just a mess.
It was a great time, though. Yeah. Great experience. Yeah.
So next time out on the podcast, there is a stage three, and boy, am I glad that we let the record button stay on for a while. Because especially with what's happened and really how we started this podcast, if you're hearing it out of context, Trevor and Mike Rowe got together in the Oxford 250 2023. However, it's not the first time that they've gotten together. Probably not going to be the last either. But for those who thought that incident on Sunday might have come out of left field, oh, no, no, no. Here's a little context you'll hear in stage three.
Well, Mike... run me around like a ragged dog, you know. And I didn't want to get into Mike and move him over because of the chance of him just sliding me back around and me losing the championship anyway. So I tried to do it clean. I never touched him. Ended up finishing behind him. And I've had bad blood with Mike previously because of the whole Richard Moody thing and Ben Rowe not driving and me driving and just...
Yeah.
Just whatever. And I was just fed up with it. And that's when I went to the front stretch during happy half hour. And
it was unhappy.
Had a few things to say.
It's Trevor and Corey Sanborn. Stage three next time out on Open Trailer Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Austin. Thank you for the support. Talk to you next time.